Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the NFL Scotland podcast. The 2018 season starts this week. It's now acceptable to count down in hours rather than days. My name is Cameron Hobbs.
And my name is Paul Mitchell. We're completing our look ahead to the upcoming season, going west this week to ask if anyone can stop the Rams. We'll also ask who'll be crowned kings in the AFC West.
We've got one final update on our Week 1 live event as we make the final preparations for our NFL party at the Golf Tavern this Sunday. We'll also have round 1 of our 2018 Pick 6 section.
And as always, we'll have the latest news, including Hard Knocks Episode 4. It was terrific. Details of our weekly Pick'em competitions, and we'll look back at the cut list, including some surprises.
And we're delighted to be joined to discuss all that and more by our guest this week from the Scottish Sun online team, Colin Lamon.
Colin, welcome along. Tell us a little bit more about what you do with the Sun online team.
Yeah, well, my features writer with the Scottish Sun. So do a bit for the paper, do a bit for online. All-round utility man, I like to think. Features... Meant to do TV, meant to do entertainment, but last week I had a pack of cocaine stuffed down my sock being chased by sniffer dogs, so you can do a bit of everything at the Sun.
That is certainly a first on the NFL Scotland yes. podcast. Well, apart from a couple of thing cameras.
Yeah.
But we won't go there. What's your NFL team?
49ers, San Francisco, yeah.
What attracted you to follow the NFL?
You know what, when I was younger, in my street actually, like a lot of kids, we used to run around playing football. And one of the kids, their uncle actually used to run, I can't remember the name of the team, but it was a team in Glasgow. And at that point in time, I just liked football, so I was like, American football, don't care, that's boring. And eventually, you know, someone managed to convince me to get involved. That was just flag football as kids. And I loved it. And just as I started to get a bit older, I started playing Madden. And that actually did help me understand the rules. And by the time I hit maybe 12, 13, I'd say that's when I was a fully fledged, you know, obsessed with the NFL. I ranked it as my favourite sport above football. And I've loved it ever since.
Madden's fantastic for teaching you things. We'll talk about that in a future pod. What position would you play?
I've always thought cornerback. I love the idea of playing cornerback because it's probably the most arrogant position in the sense that if you're good, you know you're good. You know, there's no way to hide. Ultimately, if you get burned, you get burned. It's a bit like a goalkeeper in football. You know, the blame's going to go on you. But if you're good, I just love like the old Darrell Revis stats, you know, even Nnamdi Asamoah.
Yeah.
Just when you look at their stats and the fact that it was, you know, a receiver couldn't get a catch on them at the best of times, I just thought it was the most unbelievably isolated but skilled position.
Great to have a bit of swagger in an AFL game.
Yeah.
So to kick things off, as we've done over the last couple of pods, we'll look back to what we did on a previous one. In episode 16, we talked about the AFC and NFC South. We took it to Twitter and we asked you your thoughts. So starting off with the AFC South, 61% have said that the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to win. That's quite a margin they've won that by. Second place, 21%, Houston Texans. Tennessee Titans with 13% and the Colts with 5%. No major surprise there, really. Maybe just the margin that the Jags have won that by?
Yeah, I think but the Jags have got a good following over here. I think that tends to be the way. And I think it just shows how much work the Colts have got to do.
So bias there is what Paul's suggesting. Fine. NFC South, speaking of bias, New Orleans Saints win with 48% of the vote. Quite close behind, 35%, Atlanta Falcons. Carolina Panthers with 12%, and then 5%, some very optimistic Buccaneers fans.
I'm delighted for them. I got some messages after last week's pod to say, please don't be too harsh on the Tampa Bay Bucks. So good luck to the Bucks. So let's start by looking at the NFC West, which was renamed and reformed in 2002. All the teams have won it since then. Three different teams have won it in the last 3 years. Arizona, Seattle and the Rams for San Francisco fans last won it in 2012. Although what a wild card. In 2013. Last year, the Rams 11-5, Seattle 9-7, Arizona 8-8, and San Francisco 6-10. Just have a little look at the coaching. It's interesting. Pete Carroll has coached more NFL games than the other three put together. That's the first thing that stands out. If you Steve Wilks stepping up for the first time with Arizona, second season for Sean McVay, second season for Kyle Shanahan as well. Just out of interest, I had a look at Pete Carroll's record. At Seattle, he's 79-48-1, which is not bad at all. He's won the division 4 out of 8 years. So, I mean, he's got a really solid record. But I guess, guys, to start talking about Seattle is there's a little bit of unrest in Seattle if the press is to be believed. And, you know, they're testing, is Pete Carroll too old? I don't think he is.
too early to say that he's too old, is he? He's an old head in a young division when it comes to coaches, I think. And he's a lot of experience, and that's shown over the years. And last year, they maybe struggled a little bit. You know, finished 9-7, not as strong as they had been. That Rams team were really starting to come into their own. But yeah, I mean, you got to be worried if you're a Seahawks fan, I think. The names coming in versus the names going out is very much weighted on the exit. And again, there does seem to be a lot of noise in the press. Now, with the type of team that Seattle have had, they do play loud, verbally as well as physically, and therefore I'm not totally surprised with this. I think it was always going to be one of those relationships that, you know, if it was a couple, it would be plastered all over Facebook. It was definitely one of those. But yeah, you look at, you know, Michael Bennett, Jimmy Graham, Paul Richardson to a lesser extent, but Richard Sherman gone, Jeremy Lane, and Cam Chancellor retires. That's a bunch of starters right there. The players coming in that they've replaced them with, DJ Fluker, a decent, Barkevious Mingo's a good linebacker, Janikowski's a kicker and he's making it onto the list of their greatest ins, you know, that's, and Brandon Marshall's a 34-year-old wide receiver, once great, but has injury concerns now, he's not a young man anymore. Yeah, you got to worry for Seattle, I think.
Colin, you know, it reminds me a little bit of San Francisco a few years ago. They had the sort of two great years together, and then all of a sudden, you know, all came tumbling down, players retired, players left. Similar situation, you think?
I think so. I think the Seahawks have to be realistic. I remember when the 49ers were on a bit of a come down, I think Trent Baalke at the time, he was adamant that it wasn't a rebuild. Yeah. You know, he was basically just saying it was a reload situation. I think the Seahawks will try and pass it off as that as well. They'll say, we still have Russell Wilson, which is fair enough. He is, you know, a game winner on his own right. He's a special player, I think. But yeah, the rest of the roster is looking depleted. A few years back, they were two or three deep at every position, especially defensively. You know, Russ, honestly, you could go with them winning a game scoring 10 points. You know, the defense was that good. And to lose, you know, all the guys you mentioned so far, they can't adjust that quickly, surely. I know the Seahawks love the whole world against us mentality. I think we thrive off of that. So I'm not sure we're going to have quite as bad a season as some people are suggesting. But I certainly don't think we'll have I don't think we're getting above 500 this year, unless Wilson is an MVP candidate.
And I think Wilson's the one difference there between the Niners and the Seahawks when they were going through this transitional period. The Niners didn't have a quarterback. You know, Kaepernick
arguably they did let him go in Alex Smith.
Oh yeah, they did. They had Alex Smith, but that it still felt like it was on the way up at that point when Kaepernick came in. And I mean, I remember being disappointed that Alex Smith went out, but when Kaepernick came in, I'll be honest, I was excited by what Kaepernick could offer. You know, that the read option was very much the in thing. You know, Frank Gore was still piling for the yards, and it felt like, you know what, Kaepernick's maybe the missing link to just take them that extra step. I think hindsight now is a wonderful thing, and you go, oh, why did we ever let Alex Smith go? Because after Kaepernick started to slide, and then, you know, remember last season we started with Brian Hoyer. And it's just, the difference in Seattle is that Russell Wilson has shown time and time again that he can just get results himself. Some of that running around and scrambling that he does, it's just unreal. There's nobody else in the league that does it as well as him. And I think if they are going to have a winning season, it will be now down to him and the offense rather than the defense.
They have no draft picks. That's the other thing. They went all in the last couple of years. They weren't thinking about the future. They were thinking, we can, you know, maybe go a two or three-peat here, which we came very close to. You know, they were up right up there among the very best teams, got to a few Super Bowls in a row. But they've left themselves in a really bad position with, I mean, I can't remember stat, but I think of the last 5 or 6 years, they only had like one first-round pick. They've just mortgaged their future on players, a lot of who aren't there anymore. And it's a struggle to see how, I just don't see them doing that well, unless it's a miracle, but I just don't see it.
And Penny's coming, obviously, at a time they've got a running back there. Perhaps a pick that raised a few eyebrows, they clearly wanted them. Picked up injury, hasn't really played that much time. Carson's going to start the season. But even behind that O-line, you've got to worry for any running back.
O-line's been bad forever. I can remember back to when they were, even when they won the Super Bowl. Every year it's the same thing, need to improve the O-line, need to improve the O-line. We never do, and anyone they draft hasn't really worked out. It's funny how each team always has a need that for some reason they can never fill. And for the Seahawks, it's definitely been for the last 7 or 8 seasons, the O-line. And I don't know why, because we've had, you know, we had Tom Cable for a while and different people. And
yeah, it's not even a blind spot. They know it's a problem. They're just not able to get people. Let's stay with the quarterback situation, of course. Jimmy G, San Francisco last season, lit the place up, was terrific. I was worried then when you've got all that downtime and people have studied film and is he as advertised? Is he going to come through? I'm speaking to two 49er fans.
So I am conservative, and I'm going to say that on this one. I think that he had a great end to the season, but there were some jump time games in there. The only one that is the one, in fact, two, I'm going to say the final 2 minutes against the Titans when he led us down to win, and the Jacksonville game. Because that Jacksonville game, that team was playing to win. They were still in, you know, going for the winner of the division, and there was everything to play for. You know, Jalen Ramsey came out and said, oh, you know, it was all scripted and all planned against us. You know, I think that Jimmy played really well in that game. So he's got capability. My worry for me is that he's still in a really tough league with the Rams there especially. That's a monstrous defense. That Cardinal defense isn't as strong now, I don't think, with the Honey Badger away. So maybe don't worry about them. And again, the Seahawks defense isn't as strong. The one thing I worry about in San Francisco is the options, and especially now with the Jerick McKinnon injury, because he was a receiving back. I'm not convinced that Alfred Morris is a receiving back, and therefore I think they're going to use him more to gain yards off the line. He's got an arm, and Goodwin's got pace, so if that link-up can work, brilliant. Dante Pettis looks quite exciting. I'm actually quite intrigued by him. And Pierre Garçon is an experienced receiver that Jimmy didn't have at any point available to him when he was playing last season. So it depends on how he makes that work for me.
Yeah, Garçon is French for drops the ball a lot. You know that. We'll see where that takes us. We'll come to the Rams in a moment. Let's go to Arizona. Steve Wilks played a season in the AFL, a couple of seasons in the AFL, which I hadn't realised. Been with the Panthers since 2012. His coaching tree is Lovie Smith, North Turner and Ron Rivera. Not a bad place to come out. They've gambled with Sam Bradford. Obviously got Josh Rosen in behind, who I still think was drafted later than he should have been. I think they're okay there, but I think when you've had a coach that's been, you know, been there for so long, there's a culture change to come. I think Wilkes will be allowed a poor season in terms of wins. I don't really see them troubling the scorers too much.
No, I think the Cardinals just scream mid-tier to me. I think when they went to get their head coach, I think the best of the bunch were gone, and they settled with him. I think Bradford, again, is a bit of a settle. You know, nobody's going to win a Super Bowl with Sam Bradford at quarterback. Again, could have said that last year with Nick Foles, fair enough. Sometimes you have an exception. But I remember even back to when, you know, the Rams, when they were back in St. Louis, signed or drafted Sam Bradford. I used to love when the 49ers played them because I really didn't rate him. And he maybe has one good game out of five or six, but I just...
And then he gets injured.
Yeah, exactly. I really fear for... No, care actually, because I'm a 49ers fan. I do fear if I was a Cardinals fan anyway, for, you know, I just don't see where a lot of wins are coming from them, because I think we're the worst team in the division by a fair margin. And yeah, I don't see many positive points apart from maybe certain defensive players, Patrick Peterson and people like that. You know, they're always going to be elite, but having one good cornerback doesn't make you a good team.
No, and I go back to the Honey Badger going away, and I think that he's... Yeah, letting him go was an odd one. As odd as the Raiders with Khalil Mack, but we'll come to that. I think the two things that shine bright for me in Arizona in the desert are Larry Fitzgerald still. He's still able to do it even at his age. Yeah. You know, he just keeps proving people wrong. David Johnson coming back from injury. Now, it depends on how he comes back from that injury. If he is the player that he was when he had his breakout season 2015... Brilliant. What, you know, what a breakout he had as well.
Oh, true.
And if you watched All or Nothing that season with the Cardinals, it was brilliant to watch. It really was. And I'm even saying that as a Niner, just to see that, because he comes across as a really likable, nice guy as well, which is always nice. They've added Justin Pugh as well from the Giants, so there is some O-line assistance there. But yeah, Christian Kirk's an interesting one to pick up.
I've got a nickname for him.
Right, okay.
COS.
Okay.
Church of Scotland. Christian Kirk. It has to be. So I think we should call him COS. I think that's brilliant. Nobody's probably thought of that, but
it's very niche.
It's pretty good, though.
Yeah,
it is pretty good. And the other thing, just seeing the Cardinals, I love listening to their radio guys. They're just good fun. Mm. You know, I can't remember their names offhand, but usually used to be able to get a little illegal stream, although that's pretty hard these days, because as well as cutting off just about any television feed, and good on them, as they should do, given the radio deal with some of the apps you've now got to pay for, it gets harder and harder to find. But I used to listen to them after I, you know, watched the Saints games and things like that. I've always had a soft spot. I like Bruce Arians. I thought he was a great guy. You know, came across so well in the TV. So, you know, I don't wish them ill, but I agree with you, Colin. I just can't see where the wins are going to come. The favourite, the team to beat, Sir Sean McVay. I'm sure he's been knighted by now. I mean, he has got all the hype, but I thought he handled it really well. First division title since 2003. You're in LA, everything's there. The Chargers were doing particularly well to start with. All the spotlight was on them. You've got Todd Gurley, you've got Aaron Donald, you've got Goff. They are the team to beat, but is there an Achilles heel there?
I don't know if there's an Achilles heel, because they were so good last year. That being said, you know, they were favourites over the Eagles, and the Eagles managed to beat them, I believe, in LA.
Yeah.
So they're not invincible. And the other thing I would also say, you hope it's not a potential concern if you're a Rams fan, because you're just seeing if Marcus Peters have got a corner and he signed a whole bunch of guys, you know, really good players. But remember the Eagles dream team, what was that, 2011, 2012? Everyone said the same things about them, and they were all gone a year later. So sometimes I think we were so good last year, but was there really a need to go all in, you know, the way we did? Because we put our salary cap, you know, we must have one of the highest salary caps now in the league, and they've gone all in to win everything. And I just think that can cause a lot of unrest. You were already really good. Now you've brought in a bunch of players. Who's going to say that it's not going to take them a while to settle? You know, particularly the cornerback position, you know, that's where they've really gone in. Yeah. That's also one of the most unpredictable positions out. You know, it's an interesting one, but I think the Rams are still a team to beat.
Yeah.
I think Jared Goff, he improved a lot last season, because the season prior to that, in his rookie year, I didn't think he looked very good. I think most people thought he was overdrafted. No one thought he was number one pick material. Started to prove people wrong last year. And obviously Gurley is just, like, in fairness, I know a lot of people say Le'Veon Bell is the best running back in the league. I would say Gurley is. Mm. I think he's unbelievable. Really, really good. But I also don't see Goff as, and again, I'm showing my homerism here, but I don't see Goff as a Jimmy Garoppolo or a Russell Wilson. I think he's a Sam Bradford type.
Yeah.
I think he's a facilitator. He'll go as far as the players around him will go, whereas it's the opposite for me with the Seahawks and the 49ers. We can go as far as our quarterback will take us.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's a big year for Jared Goff. I also think it's a big year for Todd Gurley. I disagree. I think Bell's the better runner, because he's got a proven body of work. Remember, Gurley, I mean, dropped off a cliff after his first year. He's had another good year. Is he going to drop off a cliff again? That would be my concern if I was a Rams fan, because I think their season hinges on him. If he runs, they're great.
Yeah.
And Goff will manage things. He's competent. I'm not a massive fan of him as yet, but he's got room to grow. But I think it hinges on Gurley. That said, I think they'll win the division. I think San Francisco will be second. I think Seattle will probably eke out enough wins in Arizona. I think it's a development season for them. That's how I see it. What about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of going to say, I can't see past the Rams, to be honest. And I think the one other person that we've not mentioned there is Brandon Cooks, who for me is an upgrade on Sammy Watkins. I think that that's an option. But again, I think that's the sort of receiver that's going to prove whether Goff is off the level to be considered a top quarterback or not. Because Cooks has got the pace, but we saw that Brady and the way that Brady plays didn't suit to Cooks, and he just didn't work out in New England. But with Drew Brees, Cooks was explosive.
That's what happens when you get a good quarterback.
Well, indeed it is. That made it sound like Tom Brady wasn't a particularly good quarterback. Okay.
Oh, me.
For me, the way I see this panning out is it's definitely the Rams at the top. After that, really, it's a roll of the dice. I'm going to be a homer and say the Niners are going to finish second. But I think, they might finish 8-8 and finish second. Then I've got the Seahawks because of Russell Wilson, and then the Cardinals underneath it.
Go on.
No, I have the same standings. I think I see definitely the Cardinals as the worst team in the division. I'd be shocked if they finished anywhere but last. Seahawks, I think 49ers and Rams have to be more confident that they're in a better position to win games now than the Seahawks. The Rams, based on last season and based on the guys I've signed, it would be maybe naive to think that the 49ers are going to come out of nowhere and storm that division. In saying that, I do think 49ers will be a lot better than last year. I do see them finishing with a winning record. And, I mean, it's not impossible the 49ers, you know, can look at themselves and think, well, if we can compete with the Rams in the two games we play against them, you know, I don't know how early they play each other in the season, but I think it'll be a really fun game. Because last year the Rams 49ers game was unbelievable, and people forget how close the 49ers came in that comeback. In fact, if Brian Hoyer didn't Brian Hoyer, then, you know, that could have been a 49ers win. So I do think the Rams will win the division, but I think it could be maybe only a win or two more than the 49ers.
Do you know, if Brian Hoyer hadn't Brian Hoyer, maybe he'd still be the quarterback now, so let's be glad that he did, eh?
Yeah,
take
exactly.
One on the chin for the greater good. What, and from one Niner to another then, what do you think is the bare minimum that the Niners need to achieve this year to call the season a success?
Winning record. I think we're one of the youngest teams in the league, and if you look at the rebuild, Jimmy Garoppolo has maybe sped that process up, or people think he has, because no one expected to get a quarterback that looked as promising so quickly. But when you look at the rest of the team, there's a few established guys like Staley, but you look outside of Joe Staley, you look around that team, Joe Staley, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, you look at the secondary.
Yeah.
You brought in Sherman, nobody knows if he's fit. Yeah. You know, until he plays a couple of games, no one knows how good he is. Linebacker wise, I mean, our best linebacker, you know, we're always just trying to keep it at present at the moment. So it's just, you really don't know. I think the 49ers have tons of potential. But until I actually see it come to fruition, then I would say I could see like a 9-7.
Yeah,
you know, something like that. And I think that would be...
And with potential, that would be a good step forward. So where do you fall, Phil, just before we move on the Richard Sherman thing then? As a Niner, it's really split people. Where do you come down on this one?
You know what? I don't think it's like football. See, football, you can never go Hearts to Hibs, Rangers to Celtic. You can't do that. American sports, I think, is a bit different. So, yes, it used to do my head in. You know, I used to find it hilarious. In fact, when I was at uni, we did a presentation on a trash talk in American sports. And, of course, he was our poster boy.
Yeah.
It was great. The whole interview he did with Erin Andrews afterwards against Michael Crabtree. Don't talk about me, that one.
Yeah.
But I think he's a really intelligent guy. He knew what he was doing. That whole secondary with the Seahawks, that was what we were built on. Trash talk, being confident, being brash, Legion of Boom, you can't beat us. And that was great. But I think he realised the Seahawks were starting to change, you know, it wasn't going to be that level of quality anymore. And I think it's a brilliant thing. Because worst case scenario is you've got a salary cap guru, right, in Prague. I forgot his surname, Prague Marath. Essentially, with Sherman, there's no risk. After this year, you've got an out. So the leadership he brings alone, I mean, you've probably noticed yourself, he gets the guys together in the off-season, brought all the youngsters together, he's coaching them up, even when he was still recovering from an injury. He's got that secondary going out for dinner all the time, like stuff that I didn't notice last year. Because you see it online now all the time, we're talking about it, and I think he's got great qualities. And if Sherman comes back half the player he was, he's still going to be an upgrade on some of the guys that we trotted out last season, because in the end we had like fifth and sixth choice cornerbacks getting burned. So I think if Sherman comes back half as good as he was, then we've got a very good starting calibre cornerback, and a Kevin Willerspoon on the other side, I think, is a really good player. So to learn from Sherman, hopefully, one Pro Bowl to another.
So moving on from the NFC, let's turn our focus to the AFC West, and let's recap last year. The Chiefs finished 10-6, the Chargers 9-7, it was pretty close there, the Raiders 6-10, and the Broncos 5-11. This for me feels a little bit interesting. There's some areas of change in that you've got the Broncos and the Chiefs under new quarterbacks. You've got the Chargers who are largely unchanged, actually, and maybe they can carry that consistency forward. And then you've got the Raiders who, it's a tire fire over there. I don't know what's going on. Seems to be chaos and people are asking if Gruden's out his depth. So, guys, how's it looking for you?
Well, let's start with Gruden. I don't think he's out his depth. I think he's in year one of, well, it's a 10-year contract, but even if you say he's going to be there for 4 years, he's taken them to Vegas. He is their poster boy for Vegas. Will the Raiders management care if they're competitive this year? My guess is no, they don't, because they are leaving. And it's harder to leave if you're a Super Bowl quality team. I think you want to cultivate the goodwill. It's not that far, realistically, from Oakland to Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a quick flight and it's certainly drivable. And let's be honest, if you lived in the Bay Area and you were going to get a wee overnight in Vegas, you'd take it. So I think I still would rather they stayed where they were, but they're not going to. It's all about the money. So they are going, unfortunately. So I think he's basically just seeing this as a time to thin out what was there and then just start to bring in. He's not daft. If they have an average season and he gets a couple of good draft picks in for next year, I think he's relatively happy. They're not going to get rid of him. It's almost a free hit, and I think he's just shaping things the way he wants to do. Will he be rusty? Yes, but got to remember, he's been in all these team meetings, meeting quarterbacks, meeting coaches. You know, it takes a lot to do a broadcast, especially something like Monday Night Football. It's a standalone game. You've got that opportunity. He clearly knows his stuff. So he will take a little while to get back into it. I mean, getting rid of Khalil Mack, I don't think anybody saw necessarily coming. Yeah. There was always that threat, but you think, no, come on, you've got to keep him. So, again, it might be something that we're just not being sold on. We're not seeing what's happening. So I don't think they will be particularly competitive, would be my guess. Looking at the other, I mean, the Chargers, how unlucky were they at the start of last season? Yeah. They found ways to lose. It was just incredible. I don't know whether it was just that, you know, the StubHub Center, smaller stadium, that mentality. I mean, I've been to the stadium. It was sort of, when it was Galaxy Stadium, sort of bench seats and, you know, bizarre things like that that you wouldn't expect in a top-class American facility. They've worked hard to try and make that their home, although it's not going to be their permanent home. And you've got to feel like there was a bit of, unsettled players. I think they're good. Philip Rivers is awesome. You know, I mean, he simply is. I think he is. He's going to be solid as ever. I think the Chargers are the team to beat in this division. An interesting call, and you look at it. I mean, Kansas have rolled the dice, taking out Alex Smith because they think Mahomes is the man.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. I think every team, unless you're the Browns, maybe, you know, you look at it from a point of view, it's Super Bowl or bust. And if Andy Reid doesn't think he's going to win a Super Bowl with Alex Smith, and he does have a playoff caliber roster, then you need to take that risk. It's a bit like we spoke about earlier when the 49ers jumped from Alex Smith to Colin Kaepernick. In some senses it worked, in some senses, you know, it didn't, but I still think it was worth that risk, because in the end, you know, it almost worked.
Yeah.
But certainly I agree with you. I think the Chargers are a team to beat as well. I do agree with that. But the Chiefs, they're always good.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I'd say they had a bad season. And Andy Reid, he always seems to start well in a season, from memory. He always seems to get off to a good start. It's usually later in the season when they start to falter. But I definitely think, I agree with you, Chargers are a team to beat, but I do think the Chiefs, wouldn't be surprised at all to see them with a winning record and playoff run.
Well, the thing for the Chiefs is it's all down to Pat Mahomes now, who has yet to throw a touchdown in his NFL career. He is a rookie. He's coming into this clean. He's looked good and exciting. They've talked about the length of his throws, his arm strength and all that kind of stuff. And he's certainly got targets. You know, he's got one of the best tight ends in the game. Sammy Watkins, I'm still not sure about, but maybe someone will make him work. And Kareem Hunt is a really good bowling ball off a back. They've also got Spencer Ware back from a year-long injury. He's a good player. You know, there's pieces there. Yeah, they've obviously... Tyreek Hill. How can I forget Tyreek, of course. There's options. They're definitely on offense. They've lost Marcus Peters, who I think is a big loss, cornerback. And that, you know, that Kansas City defense was really good. And that's going to be slightly weaker this year, I think. But if you look at last year as well, and you look at that bad start that the Chargers had, they still only finished one win behind the Chiefs. And it felt, you know, I felt like, oh, the Chiefs could really go all the way here when I was watching them during the season. So I'm in agreement with you guys as well. I see the Chargers as the team to beat. They've obviously lost Hunter Henry. That's a bad one. Interesting to see, though, that he is on PUP and not IR. So I wonder whether they think he might come back at some point, whether he injured himself early enough in the season that actually he could reappear. But they've got Antonio Gates anyway. Antonio Gates comes back in. He's a very experienced tight end. Rivers knows him, so that's going to work well. Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram are two of the most exciting pass rushers. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing Joey Bosa out at Wembley this year. I think he's going to be a brilliant player to watch. Yeah. And they've picked up Derwin James, who a lot of people were raving about as well, from Florida State, taking 17th in the draft. That's a good safety option for them as well. That secondary's decent. Casey Hayward is a good cornerback. They've got talent all over the park as well. You know, Keenan Allen, they've got a bunch of receivers that have kind of not quite necessarily made it yet, but...
I think they could have stormed the playoffs last year if they got there, you know, because they were that good. The one downside is they've got Geno Smith, so yeah. I look forward to Philip Rivers being benched strangely for 1 week and Geno Smith coming in just to make that weird trivia question.
Streak Rooner, what kind of nickname is that?
I'd love to see that on the back of the jersey, wouldn't it? Because in baseball, they have a players' weekend where all the players get to put their nicknames on their jerseys. Right, that would be a great thing in the NFL, and you could get Streak Rooner put on the back of Geno Smith. I think we've hit an idea that we're going to pitch.
So that's two nicknames, in the West.
Yeah, brilliant. I've done this.
Going back to the Raiders, though, I'm still I'm still worried about them, I'll be honest. Like, they've got the oldest squad at 27.4 years old. I don't know how many months that is in 0.4. The players that they've brought in, Jordy Nelson is a great receiver. And in Jordy Nelson and Amari Cooper, they've got great receivers. They've got Derek Carr, who, if Derek Carr's back and fit, is an option there. But Derek Carr's injuries have had their toll. Jordy Nelson's injuries have had their toll. Doug Martin is not... Well, there's one season of Doug Martin that was worth having, and the rest of it isn't, pretty much. Marshawn Lynch isn't a young man anymore.
But again, I come back to you, what's the risk?
Oh, totally.
What's the risk? And I don't think there is one for the Raiders.
No, yeah. Like you say, there's nothing to lose. And they've got rid of Khalil Mack. They've got a couple of first-round picks now next year. So they can use them wisely and actually start to build. They've brought in AJ McCarron, which... Fine, as far as backs go, it's a decent backup QB. It's definitely better than Geno Smith. So, you know, there is that. But I could see them really suffering. And maybe they...
I don't think that's a problem. I don't think they'll tank. But I think Gruden will point to, you know, he's trying to turn it over. There'll be younger players coming through. The promise of a better tomorrow. I think all of that is coming in. He wants his own players, he wants his own squad. And as I say, because they're scooting out of there, I don't think you'll get the same pressure from the stands that they might have done. Yeah. And again, I'll reiterate for Raiders fans, I wish they were staying there. Yeah. I don't like teams moving.
Well, I agree with you. I don't think they want to spend money. To get rid of Khalil Mack, I don't care what they got in return, it wasn't worth it. If you have a franchise pass rusher in his prime and you've still got another good 4 or 5 seasons out of him, you don't trade him. No other team in the league would have traded him.
Yeah.
And also, I think, I may be wrong, they have the salary cap room, they have the money.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a cash issue because they are moving stadium and the owner doesn't want to stamp up the money, which I believe is the case. I believe that's why Khalil Mack left. I think John Gruden will be upset about it. I think the whole coaching staff, I think teammates, as you could tell with some of our tweets afterwards and things, were upset. I think it's entirely down to a money issue.
Well, money, and they don't want... I don't think they want a good team. You know, it's hard... If they, you know, if they were a 13-3 team leaving Oakland, people, you know, be heartbreaking for so many people. If you can run out of town as a 3-13 team, it just changes that dynamic slightly.
They want to be the Rams, just like them. Yeah. Have your first big season in your new home.
In your new home. That's where they're going. I mean... The team that we've not really talked much about are the Broncos. Yeah. Of course, Case Keenum going there. Still interesting that Minnesota cleared the decks completely. But it's an interesting one. But he was quickly signed as well. He didn't hang around. Can he bounce this Broncos team back? Because the Broncos were pretty average to watch last season, to be honest.
But and I think they've addressed, though, the problem that they had last year. Because... Again, if you look at that team, Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders are two great receivers. Horribly underused because they didn't have a quarterback last year. Paxton Lynch, obviously, that experiment's over. He's been cut now. So, you know, Case Keenum, as long as they get 2017's Case Keenum and not 2013 to 2016 Case Keenum, then they've got an opportunity. You know, just looking back at his stats, it's, you know, 325 passes for 481 attempts. 22 touchdowns. He was great. I think it was 3,500 yards over the season. And he took Minnesota right into the postseason as well. He played really well. Other than that game against the Eagles right at the end where they just didn't seem to turn up. They did really well. And he made a receiver like Adam Thielen, who I think actually under Cousins could have the biggest drop-off of the receivers that did well last year. And Stephon Diggs, who likes to drop the ball as well from time to time. You know, he didn't really have amazing options in Minnesota. So they get 27, Case Keenum. I think actually the Broncos could have a good year and really bounce back. Royce Freeman, I think as well, will win that running back role. I think that Devontae Booker's not got the strength. I think that he's not that third down back. And I think that rookie Royce Freeman is a bigger back. He's maybe not as explosive or quick change of pace, but... I think he's got the power to add something there as well. And yeah, it's an interesting one.
Do you see Paxton Lynch getting picked up by anyone?
It will get picked up, I'm sure, but I don't think he's starter material. He's not proven anything.
Yeah,
I'm sure a team will get him and make him maybe a backup, you know, potentially. He's obviously got potential. You know, he's big and he's strong. And sadly, that seems to be enough to get you drafted in the NFL quite high.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's not got that ability. But I do agree with Broncos. It will be an interesting team to watch. I'm not too sure about Keenum. Like, you know, one big season. I remember when Kevin Kopp had one big season. So it's not... I don't think he's an elite quarterback. And I think as well, the Broncos have drafted quite badly the last few years and have been relying on Von Miller and company to keep them in games.
Yeah.
They can't afford that defence to have any sort of, you know, fall off, because if they do, I just don't think. I think the Broncos, actually, it's ironic that the Broncos and Seahawks are playing week one against each other, because I see them in exactly the same spot. Just like the Broncos have a great defence and the Seahawks have Russell Wilson, I think they each have one part of our game that is so good.
Yeah.
But it's just so unequal.
Yeah.
I don't see the other side of our game matching up, and I see the Broncos just as I struggle to see them getting any more than 4 or 5 wins.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I'm going to be Chargers will win it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think the Broncos will finish second. I think they'll top Kansas City. I think they've got enough with the defense, and I think if it stays healthy, and just with Keenum, with the targets that he's got, they've upgraded the cornerbacks as well. So I think there's potential there. Kansas City, I may be horribly wrong, I have been before, but Mahomes has yet to do it for me.
Yeah.
You know, he's yet to do it for anybody. Yeah. So I want to see him in the first 2 or 3 games. That might change. And I can't see Oakland being anything but bottom.
Yeah, I'm going to swap them around. So I see the Chargers still winning this easily. I think they'll win by a good couple of games. I think that Mahomes will do just enough to get the Chiefs into second place. And then I see the Broncos after that. I think picking up Bradley Chubb out of the draft, I think for them, is the one thing on their defence that could be interesting. If he is the player that they think he's going to play, and it being alongside Von Miller, I think he's learning under the best man. That could be the game changer on the defence for them. But yeah, I think the Raiders are going to be in the top 3 picks at the draft next year. I really see them.
And I think they'll be happy to be there.
Yeah. We're not even touching the Martavis Bryant debacle, but we are going to talk about cuts, so we'll pick it up there. But I could see them struggling big time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the Chargers, you know, will win that division. The only issue I have with the Chargers is they don't have much of a home field advantage.
Yeah.
Compared to every other, you know, team that you watch, the games I watched last year, played really well at home, but there was just no atmosphere. And I think in the end, you look at some of the other, like Chiefs are a great example. You see the Chargers going to Arrowhead and playing. That's intimidating, that's scary. No one's scared to go and play.
Yeah.
You know, I get that the Chargers. The only thing that's scary is how good their team is. And I think stadiums do make a difference, and I think that could hurt them. Still think they'll be good enough to win. Like you say, Pat Mahomes, untested, unproven. Great physical attributes, but whether or not that translates onto the field, we're yet to see. I think the Chiefs will finish second. I think Andy Reid's a great coach. I think they've got a great roster. So I'm pretty set in that place. 3 and 4, I was actually maybe a little bit closer than you guys. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't see the Broncos having a great season. But the Raiders look like such a dumpster fire that I would have to say they'll finish last, and the Broncos might get 4 or 5 wins and finish third place. But like you, I'd be very confident in the Chargers, because all over the field, I mean, I think Bosa's going to be defensive player of the year. Mm. I think he's that good. And, you know, Melvin Ingram would be a franchise pass rusher on most other teams, and he's your second option. So they will be relentless off the edge. And I think quarterbacks, I mean, Case Keenum, Derek Carr, Pat Mahomes, will spend most of their time on their bum, because it's going to be relentless.
So just a quick update then on our live event, which is taking place this Sunday now at the Golf Tavern to kick off NFL season and to kick off week one. We're having our party. We are joined by Jamie Borthwick from STV News, Don Edmondson, head coach of the Edinburgh Wolves. We've sold well over 100 tickets. We've actually only got a few left, so if you're picking up this podcast now and it's before Sunday and you want to come along, get on this fast, because we are going to sell out. There's not going to be tickets available on the door. We're confident of that. And basically, we're going to have 2 hours of chatting about football, a bit of a laugh. We've got competitions, we've got giveaways, and we're going to get people that are there totally involved in the afternoon, and then we're going to sit down and we're going to watch 7 hours of non-stop football.
It's a pretty good day.
It's a pretty good day.
And the prizes are amazing.
They're still coming in.
Yeah.
Still coming in. So there's going to be loads to give away. We've also got a couple of jerseys. We've got an Andrew Luck jersey. We've got a Von Miller jersey. We're going to be having a raffle for those on the night. But there's going to be opportunities for people to get involved with a couple of quizzes and things like that. Plenty going on. So if you haven't bought your ticket yet, please do come along and join us. We're really hopeful that if this is a success, we're going to take this other places as well later in the season. So yeah, hopefully we see you there. Golf Tavern. It all starts at 4 o'clock. Get there just before, so that you're in plenty of time. Wear your jersey as well. We want to see a sea of colour. I think from looking at the list as well, we've got every single team represented. We even have a Browns fan.
Fantastic. Wear your jersey, Browns fan. We want to know where you are. So let's now have a look at Hard Knocks. We've been following the Cleveland Browns. It's not been dull, that's for sure. Takeaways from the last episode, I think Hugh Jackson is looking better with every episode. The rookie show was fabulous. I thought that was really good. I thought they did that just beautifully. I think we saw possibly the worst game we're going to see all season. Eagles 0, Browns 5 was just incredible to watch. In saying that, Miles Garrett looked good. I mean, he's fast, he's fit, you know. And I also thought them talking about the weakness of the other team was absolutely spot on. And what I'm trying to do this year is trying to watch both lines a lot more closely. Mm. You know, you know what the corners do, the safeties do, the wide receiver. It's the line play. I'm just at that stage, I'm more interested in the line play and just watching how guys back people away, come in, you know, keep people off balance. The thing that impressed me most, Tyrod Taylor obviously went down very heavily and it looked like he'd done his wrist.
Yeah.
To go and get the x-ray in these circumstances, you've told there's nothing broken. So to me, you think, brilliant, that's great news. Let's go and take the stuff off, have a quick shower and go, you know, suit and boot. He wanted to come back out. And I think that sends a superb message right through the whole squad to say, guys, I'm your leader for now. Might not be for long with Baker Mayfield, but I'm your leader. I'm hurt. It's taped up. I'm coming back out. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah. I agree, and I thought the injury looked so sore. Oh. That was one of those ones that really makes you, you know, big in-breath of air. The Miles Garrett scene with the soul music, now I don't know what the song was, but I thought that was hilarious, well, with everyone shouting, yeah, get that music off, and I just thought that was a really nice touch. But the other thing, and I think Hard Knocks is so well put together, you know, it's beautiful at times. That slow motion throw from Baker Mayfield to, it was Higgins,
yeah,
and it was beautiful. The spiral on it, you could just, it was wonderful, just beautifully shot. So I love Hard Knocks for stuff like that. The one I was going to ask you about though, Paul, was the meeting that Tyrod and Baker had with the Fox team before the game, and obviously they sat down with Troy Aikman. Troy's able to ask them questions. Is that's not something you really get to do in Scotland when you're doing a commentary game, do you? Do you get that chance to sit down with the players, and is it something that you'd want to do before the game?
You get certain access, but it's usually to record interviews that are going to be shown on the telly. I suppose the closest we would come would be to, say, to do a Scottish Cup final, where you've got access to both teams, but it tends to be a sit-down for television. If you then know the people, you can have a little chat with them. The best I've ever seen was, and I think the SFA, to be fair, tried this once. We went to do a game in Norway, and a couple of days before the game, the Norwegians basically brought out their whole squad, all the press were there, and you could just go and talk to anybody you liked. And that was brilliant because you were able to talk to people, get little nuggets of information. And that's what the Fox guys are trying to do. They're trying to get a sense of where the player's at. You're trying to get things out that other people don't know, which gets harder and harder in the internet world because everything's there. You're looking for nuggets. You're looking for information. I was actually more impressed with Troy Aikman because I thought, you know, he had the MacBook there. He was taking notes. It wasn't like, you know, I'm Troy Aikman. There's the rings, guys. I'm just going to sit down. He's still looking good, isn't he, by the way? Scarily good. But I thought he was engaged. I thought he really wanted to know what was going on. And he was quite happy to offer his own advice if they wanted it. I just was highly impressed. I wasn't sure that he would be like that. It tends to be the play-by-play guy that would be more like that. 100% impressed with Troy.
And it's, and obviously we didn't see the whole interaction of that conversation, but it felt much more positive.
Yes.
We're trying to get the positives out of the story. There's, and I think that's the one thing that the NFL maybe does a little bit better than sometimes over here, is they focus so much on the positive. Obviously, if things have gone horribly wrong, you can only focus on that. But it felt more like, you know, tell us what's been going on. Tell us what's been going good. Tell us what you're looking forward to. It was all about framing it in a positive light. And I just thought it was a really interesting thing. In my time with the radio, it was always reporting. And then after, it was never before. So I thought it'd be interesting to find out if that's something that you got to do. But a really nice interaction. And I thought Baker Mayfield, again, came across really well. And I think, actually, the Browns have drafted a really good player who will be the backup to start the season. But, well, at some point in the future, be the Browns' number one quarterback.
I'll still maintain they could have gotten further down.
Yes.
But I've certainly been impressed with what I've seen. They'll win games this year.
Yeah.
I think they'll win games off the back of the defence. But I was impressed. Hugh Jackson's come on in the estimations as well, as a bit concerned in the first couple of episodes. But I think there's a much more realistic buzz about this team than the Bucks last year. Yeah. I thought there was just a bit too much hype on the Bucks last year. Yeah. But I did somebody reference, how do you know the Browns? Because they've got the word Browns written on their on their pants. You know, you're like, yeah, that's got to go.
Yeah. Colin, you've been watching it yourself. What's your biggest takeaways from the season?
No, I've really enjoyed it too. It's quite nice to see an all-access sort of insight into the sport. I know Man City had the thing recently, but in football you don't really get that over here very much. Whereas it's just nice to see the players off the field.
Yeah.
You know, in the locker room, in their day-to-day lives, and you actually see they have a personality. Yeah. I think the media over there, and just broadcasting in general, do a much better job of showing a player's personality. Here, you know, in sport, people are hidden away. We don't want you to get to know them. We just want you to see them on the pitch, and then they're gone. Go home. I love over there how they don't care. We encourage you to actually get to see their personality, see them sing, see the stupid initiations they go through. See, you know, I've loved it. The only thing that I differ from you guys was, it was interesting you talked about the injury to Tyrod Taylor. From Hugh Jackson's point of view, I thought that was odd. They allowed him back in the game. In fact, if that were the 49ers and that was Jimmy Garoppolo, I would be fuming if they let him back in the game. So just looking at it from the other side, playing devil's advocate, I think Hugh Jackson showed a little bit of naivety there, because one, he never even seemed to bother with the injury. He was more intrigued. He didn't show any concern at all. And two, what if he had gone out and got injured even worse? You
know, there's always that potential. Yeah. I think he probably did it deliberately to say, you know, you're on for one series, because it sends the message, and I think it was worth the risk. Perhaps he had a quiet word and said, if anybody comes near you, you're throwing that thing away.
Yeah.
But I think the message was there. But it's been a good series.
Yeah.
So moving on then, let's talk about some of the cuts then, because this is the time of year now. In previous years, this is done over stages. But for the first time, I think this is the first time ever.
Yeah,
they've gone straight from the big roster right down to their 53. Was there anyone that struck you as a bit of a surprise that got cut? Feels like the obvious one is Dan Bailey.
Yeah, Dan Bailey is the kicker. Getting cut from Dallas is strange. Closer to home, I've been following the Saints. Jonathan Williams was getting a really good rep, and they've decided, no, he's not the guy, so he's going to be picked up elsewhere. I think what's interesting will be the next 3 or 4 days is to see who gets picked up. Because a lot of the buzz about the Saints were they could get the roster down to about 60, and the final 7 cuts, they reckon these 7 players will play somewhere else, go and find somewhere else quite quickly, because they feel that they were stacked in certain positions. So I think there's one or two. There's always a surprise. There's always that, you know, best player in training type mentality. And it is interesting to see, and what will be interesting is to see how other teams quickly move, because that shows you're scouting. You're watching the other teams to see, tell you what, they've got too much depth there. That player's on the cusp for them. But actually, it's a starter for us. So I think it'll be interesting. The next few days will be interesting.
So just to touch on Dan Bailey, I actually went and looked, because he's a player for me that's synonymous with points from fantasy football. Dan Bailey is a player that gets picked up. I've looked, I've drafted, and I'm in 4 different leagues. I've drafted in 3 of them, and Dan Bailey had been picked up in all 3. So someone's sitting there going, ugh, season's not even started, one of my players been cut. His career accuracy for field goals and points after is 88.2%. Which is pretty accurate. So I thought, right, how does that compare to others? And I hadn't picked up on this at all. Mason Crosby's another one who I think is pretty good. He's on 80% accuracy. So, you know, 8% less. Graham Gano, Dundee-born Graham Gano, 81.7%. So there's 7% less. Matt Bryan, who's still playing, and he's 102, he's 85.8% accuracy. So, again, Dan Bailey's better. Plus, he's got the... Matt Bryan's 43, so Dan Bailey's 30, so he's got 13 years in him. So, you know, Dan Bailey's got at least 10 years left in him. Steven Goskowski, who's the Patriots kicker, 87.6, so even he's not as accurate as Dan Bailey. The only kicker, and I'm going to cover this up, and the only kicker in the league that's better for accuracy. Any ideas?
Wow.
Is it a relatively experienced player?
Yes. I think he's a fantasy go-to right away. I'll put them on the spot and they failed, I'll give you the answer. Justin Tucker.
Yeah.
So really? Justin Tucker has a 90.1% accuracy, and from reading stuff online, he only jumped ahead of Dan Bailey at the end of last season because Bailey missed 2 field goals in a single game. and that dropped his accuracy to the point that Tucker overtook him. So, you know, I looked through the stats as well. I think they were the 22nd most accurate team, the Cowboys. So fine, he's not right up at the top last season. He didn't have his best year. But at 30-year-old, you know, players can have a bit of a season. I'm really surprised. I don't get it.
And the thing you can't measure is the clutch factor.
Yes.
I'm not a Cowboys fan, so I could be getting this completely wrong, but in the games I have watched, he's one of those kickers that you see walking up, but you just expect.
Yeah,
you know,
bond.
He had it through the uprights. He's clutch. There's totally. A lot of kickers that I'd be terrified of, you know, and not him. And I don't know if it's maybe a monetary thing. I don't know actually if he signed the contract recently or if he was due.
I've not even looked at it, but the kickers never get that much money anyway. This, you know, with Khalil Mack, you know, fair enough, you don't want to pay him. Yeah. And the Bears have just made him the best paid defensive player. But I mean, no one's making Dan Bailey the best paid kicker, fine. Yeah. But
no, but there's 20 other kickers as we go to record in the NFL that are now worried about their job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Simple as that, because he'll be suited and booted for week one, there's no doubt about it.
And if the trend of this podcast continues, by the time this actually goes out, he'll have a team.
Absolutely,
so,
tomorrow.
So insert, yeah. I'll just edit this and put a team name in.
Well, to be honest, Cameron, that's exactly where I thought you'd go.
Yeah. Right, okay, so let's finish up this podcast then. This is it, the season started.
Absolutely, let's go for it. Let's get this thing moving.
In every other one, we're going to talk about all the games, but in this one, we've talked so much about the previews, we're focused on the pick six, and anyone that comes along to our live event, you're going to hear us talk about all of these games in a bit more detail. Pick six section, we're going every week, Paul, myself, and our guest will pick the winners of six games that we'll pick at random, we'll collate them together, and then we'll see who does the best. So, gents, we're going to start first of all with the Thursday night game, which is the Eagles versus the Falcons. Who have you got? I'm going to start with you, Paul.
Horrendous. Utterly horrendous. I can't pick the Falcons. Eagles.
Eagles.
Falcons.
Falcons. I'm also going to say the Falcons, because Vince isn't going to be playing. That's where I'm going. Next up after that, then, let's go for battle of the potential bottoms and Colts versus Bengals.
I think home field advantage will determine this one. It's going to be the Colts.
I'd agree. Yeah, I think Andrew Luck back in his first game in a long time. Hopefully he'll light them up.
So I'm going to say the Bengals here, because I think Andrew Luck is in his first game back. I actually think the Bengals might get one of their few wins.
Yeah,
You know, it's fine, it's home field advantage for the Colts, but there's enough talent on that Bengals team on offense that they could do well against what's not a great defense of the Colts. Okay, we're going to pick the homers, so Saints-Buccaneers.
I'll go wild actually, and against expectation, and go with the Saints.
Yeah, I think it's the easiest game to pick. I think Saints by potentially four touchdowns.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm going to say the Saints as well, but it's a clean sweep. Right, so we're sticking to the homers. Vikings 49ers.
I think it's a great game, man. It's a superb game. It's going to get a good showcase across America. Again, home field advantage tilts it for me. Although I'd probably be tempted to go for the Vikings if it had been in California anyway, so the Vikings.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm biased, but I'll go 49ers. I think Kirk Cousins' first game, who knows what the chemistry's going to be like with that offense. Defensively, we know, along with the Jags, the Vikings probably the best unit in the league. So for all we know, you know, everything could go totally wrong for Jimmy G. Could be a nightmare scenario, but the guy hasn't tasted defeat in the regular season. Vikings are bedding in a new QB, and I've got to dream, so I think it's possible that the 49ers could eke out a win.
Quite right. I wish I had your confidence. As I said at the top of this, I'm conservative, so I'm going to say that the Vikings are going to win it, but I think it'll be close. I think the Niners will be in this game enough to keep it interesting, and enough that we're going to get still that warm fuzzy feeling of having Jimmy at the helm afterwards. But yeah, I've got the Vikings on that one. Right, okay, Patriots Texans.
Terrific game, isn't it? That really should be. Deshaun Watson is more than capable of beating the Patriots. I don't think there's any doubt about that. However, the rule of the NFL says you do not bet against Tom Brady, Patriots.
Well, we almost won in Boston last year.
Yeah.
So, if Watson wasn't coming off an injury, if this was just him coming into his second season and he'd continued as he's gone on, I'd probably pick the Texans. Don't know what he's like coming off that injury. He's not played a game. You don't pick against Brady. I'll go Patriots, but would not be in the least bit surprised if the Texans get the biggest win of their last, well, since their last playoff game.
Yeah. And I'm actually going to go the Texans, because I think Deshaun Watson is going to be conservative, but DeAndre Hopkins is an absolute monster wide receiver, and I think that Texans defence is back, and it's healthy for week one, it won't be by week three, because that's what happens to the Texans. But I think they're going to hunt Brady down, and those legs of his are just not going to keep moving. He's an older man now, so I think Brady's going to get got, and I think the Texans are going to steal that one. And for the last one in this pick six, right, I'm sticking to the 6 o'clock games because there's some tasties coming up later on, but let's stick to the 6 o'clocks. I was going to talk about Brown Steelers, but nope, I'm going to say Giants Jaguars, just purely because Odell's back, Saquon Barkley's there, Eli's their man again, versus the best defense in the league. So how do we see this one going?
I'm going with the Jaguars. I don't think the Giants... I mean, we've talked about how quickly do you hit? You know, does Barkley hit quickly? You know, OBJ's... I mean, he is brilliant. Whether you love him or not, he is brilliant. And Manning as well, completely capable. But there's just something about the Jags. Bit of swagger, import from last year. Yeah, I'll stick with the Jags. Sometimes you've got to think the away team has to do it. Would it surprise me if the Giants won? No, but if they do so, I think it'll be a bit of a grind.
I think the Giants made it. If I had to make a pick, again, kind of like the 49ers, maybe it's more in, you know, maybe more pie in the sky, I don't know, but it's a Tom Coughlin bowl, first of all, which makes it quite interesting. You know, he's going to get one to get one over on his previous team. But I think Eli Manning, you get good Eli and you get bad Eli. So if you get good Eli and Saquon Barkley's on his game, Odell's back, just got his big contract, there seems to be a good chemistry again. Last year, I mean, that locker room was divided, yeah. You know, must have been a horrible environment. We're good again. And also week one, I agree with you, Jags defence is unbelievable, but week one, you don't know what's going to happen. And I think we're such a good feel good factor right now with the Giants that I think we could do it and shock people with that offence.
So I think this is going to be really close. I actually think this is going to be one of those games where the Giants are going to score a lot of points on offence. I think that the Jags are going to get enough key takeaways throughout it, though, to give Bortles enough to get some points back again. I could see this being quite high scoring, but...
Go for the tie, go on.
I'm going to come down on the side of the Jaguars, because actually I think Leonard Fournette is going to be a difference maker against that defence. And I think although they've got Blake Bortles in there, I think that Fournette's going to be strong enough to give them enough on offence to make the difference. I don't see that Giants D showing up, whereas I do see the Jags D showing up. I think that's the edge. So I'm going for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Well, that concludes things for episode 17. We hope you've enjoyed listening, and again, we'd love to hear your feedback, good and bad. Make sure that you follow us on Twitter at ScotlandNFL and on Facebook, www.facebook.com/ScotlandNFL.
Thank you to Colin for joining us in the studio. Thanks to all of you who've been listening, sharing and chatting about this podcast. We continue to see the numbers grow every week. Please do share this podcast with your friends, all your NFL friends, even those that don't like the NFL. Share it. We don't mind.
Stay tuned to our Twitter account for all the latest news on our week one live event. And we've got a few tickets left, so if you're going to grab them now, do so if you want to come along.
We'll be back next week, as for the first time since we started this podcast, we'll have a whole week's worth of fixtures to pick apart, and then we'll be looking forward to week two. Enjoy the football. We hope to see you at the Golf Tavern on Sunday if you're in Edinburgh. But until then, thanks for listening. Bye for now.